Everybody, good evening. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around for a while tonight. We will unfreeze your jets, blow your mind a little bit. Hey, we're going to start the program tonight. A little good news. On this program? Yeah, a little good news. Got an email from Bob Alexander today, the prosecutegeorgebush.com guy. Right? Prosecutegeorgebush.com. He wrote, Mike, because I've had a lot of help from a local web design guy, we now have up prosecutegeorgebush.com 2.0. You ought to check this out. I went there this afternoon. 50 new pages listing the 2,200 prosecutors that received the book and Vince's cover letter that went with the book, as well as downloadable PDF files of all the prosecutors by state. A downloadable petition to print, circulate, and mail back to a local district attorney. And thanks to you and your listeners, we don't need no stinking donate button no more. It's not on the website. According to Arminda, the financial analyst person, we raised $11.91 more than we needed. With that kind of cash floating around, we just might go crazy when the guy asks, do you want fries with that? And we'll just say, yes! The Call Your Prosecutor Day kicks off tomorrow. I'm emailing everyone who has donated to the project tonight to go find their district attorney. Bob, you should go check. If you want to see what the donations you made, whether they were in cash or just with good positive energy, and try not to crash the site. Go to prosecutegeorgebush.com and take a look at the website. There is so much there. I went to the now, if you have AOL, you may have a problem. So use as your browser, use Explorer or Mozilla or something else. You know, just don't use AOL. It's just so screwy. But once you get there, you will find the names, addresses, it's set up by state. I mean, you won't believe this. There are 2,200 prosecutors listed there, and they're all listed by state, and then down to county. And then the names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses. I mean, Jesus, God, I don't know how he did this. And I don't know how his local web design guy did it. But you ought to check it out. Just try not to crash the site. prosecutegeorgebush.com. And after all the work that Bob and his wife Arminda and Jude and everybody else who was involved in this, and there were just a whole list of people. Bob sent me a list, mostly just first names, last week, people who were there to put these books in the mailers and get them out to the district attorneys around the country. And it was just astonishing. I've seen some pictures. There may be some photos on the website of all these folks working like busy as little beavers getting these things out. But it's done. It's done. 2,200 prosecutors in the United States, probably the majority of whom will not be interested, but all it takes is one. So we're about to find out, aren't we? This was one of the most, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? I'm looking for an adjective. One of the most profoundly, no, let me back up. This is one of the most, I can't think of an adjective. Damn it. What Bob and Arminda and Jude did, this is what I'm trying to get to. It is one of the clearest demonstration of grassroots, not just organizing. There wasn't a whole lot of organizing here. It was just hardcore labor. Nobody asks these three people to do this. Nobody. Bob took it on himself. And then, you know, he called the program one night or sent me an email or something to ask for a few donations to see if we could get this going. Bang! Worked with the publisher to get all these books at a reduced rate. Got Vince Bugliosi, who wrote it, to prosecute George Bush for murder, to write a cover letter. I mean, it's astonishing. How often? Now, seriously. How often do you see something like this happen? I mean, we all have good intentions, right? Don't we? Huh? We do. We all, yeah, well, I'll take care of that next week, or I'll do that first thing in the morning. How many times have I said that? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, I'll know about something. It has to be done. I know it has to be done. It's right in the purview. It's something I believe in. I've got the energy. Yeah. Oh, damn. I'm going to do this tomorrow. And then tomorrow rolls around. Something else comes. Oh, okay. I'll get to it Wednesday. And then Wednesday. We all do that. We do it. And I'm not kick anyone's ass about that. I mean, I do it. I do it all the time. One thing after another that I should just put a little energy into it. Malloy, come on, do that. Okay, tomorrow. Well, Bob did it. He did it. Jesus, God. I mean, well, okay. Sorry. Go to his website, prosecutegeorgebush.com, and take a look. And what you might want to do is download the petition. There's all kinds of stuff there that you can do. The Call Your Prosecutor Day kicks off tomorrow. Bob's emailing everyone who donated to the project tonight to find their DA on the website, download the information you need, and send a letter. That's all you have to do. All you have to do. 41 cents. What's postage, Callie? 41, 42? Just a stamp.
I think it's $4 now.
No, that's not for a while.
Isn't there an up change?
No, that's not for a while. Just do it, okay? Just like you all did with the donations and the positive energy that you sent these three people. Good God. I mean, I am very, very impressed at what they did. This is exactly what Saul Alinsky talked about. This is exactly what it takes to organize the frustration. Rather than sitting here on a talk show every night, like I do, just spewing out all this pent-up rage and frustration, I mean, okay, that I guess there's a reason for that too, but it's minor compared to people who actually do something, or the people who contribute the money so that a person can do something. You know what I mean? Or the people that send the good energy, the people who look at it and say, "Oh my God, he's going to do that! Wow, I don't have any money, but man, I hope it works. Go Bob, go!" That counts too. You see, that counts too. It all counts. So after all the smoke cleared, all the books out, everything in everybody's hand, they have 11 bucks left over, and he figures it's okay if he goes out and takes Jude and his wife and his kid and goes out and buys a... It's not going to be, do you want fries with that? They don't eat that way. It'll probably be to that Asian restaurant that he took me to when I was in Seattle, he and his wife and son, and they'll have soup. Anyway, check it out. prosecutegeorgebush.com. It's amazing. It's very easy to get get discouraged and think, well, Jesus Christ, nobody does anything anymore. Not completely true. Some people still do. So. All right. Okay, we have a break coming up here. We're going to get to the really, now that we got the good news out of the way, now that we got the positive stuff out of the way, now that we've celebrated the energy and the work of a group of people who said, no, hell no, we're not going to sit here. Now we've done all that, we can go back to the standard Mike Malloy program, bitching!
I'm
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Jesse listened to the program in the Czech Republic, in Prague, and I got an email from him today. Mike, I'm a long-time listener to your show. I now live in Europe. Usually listen to your podcast with my subscription to Nova M. Well, that's all changing. though I occasionally am up at 3 a.m. listening to you live on the internet stream. I admire your courage and the fact that you don't take BS from anyone. Keep it up. As a patriotic American who finds racism in any way it manifests itself to be absolutely despicable, and as someone who used to live and work in the New York City area and who has friends and family there, I am still not over the shock and disbelief I have that the New York Post allowed such a racist cartoon to be published. I've perhaps never seen anything more offensive than that, aside from perhaps racist graffiti written by neo-Nazis on the wall of a bathroom in a commuter station in the Czech Republic in 1997, showing what looked just like a hanged man in that children's spelling game, Hangman, with the word gypsy written below it. It was over 11 years ago when I saw that, and society here has changed so much for the better and become more tolerant that it would now be hard to find that kind of racist graffiti in the Czech Republic. What was the New York Post thinking? I never liked that paper, but I always had the impression that it was just a stupid yet harmless Fox News-like publication. I find it even more offensive than the cartoon itself that New York Post editors actually defended the cartoon and claimed it was not racist. If nothing else serves as proof that the Republican Party is nothing but a bunch of racist scum, this does. As an American living in another country, it is embarrassing to have to explain to people who read about this in the newspaper here and ask me about it that, sadly, despite all the progress that has been made, America, yes, is still a deeply racist country. Jesse in Prague. Jesse doesn't know because he got this late this afternoon, but according to Oberman's program, the New York Post has published on its editorial page what amounts to an apology, although it's one of those weasel word apologies, if anyone was offended type thing. You know, they always qualify. You know, right-wingers who are caught with certain body parts where they shouldn't be, or you know, like their feet in their mouths. What'd you think I meant? They always have that kind of sideways apology, right? To anyone who might have been offended, we do apologize. That was not our intent. You know, we always show blasted chimpanzees laying on the ground with direct references to the President of the United States. Of course we do. What the hell? Bastards. So anyway, Jesse, go to New York Post online if you can stomach it, and you'll see their so-called apology. All right, moving right along to the latest missive from Prairie 2, who writes, the producer price index moved up sharply for January, contrary to predictions, prompting the explanation, see, there's no deflation. Bat squeeze. Most of the increase came in fuel and food, and after 6 months of alarming declines, it's probably just a one-month anomaly. It's almost impossible to have inflation with the credit markets frozen. The only commodities that are up are gold and silver, as the rich increasingly flee paper-based assets. Oh, and farm commodities are up as the middle class increasingly flees paper assets into canned goods. They really are up slightly, since grain has fallen to about half their recent highs. Inflation is inevitable with the government printing so much money, but only if we survive the deflation first. Inflation can be controlled with prudent tax policy and a strict clampdown on speculative markets, things that give Republicans and other parasites fits. And then he wrote, P.S. I'm dismayed that some people hate my writing. Because I had sent him, I'd forwarded to him a couple of emails from people. I don't like Prairie 2. I'm dismayed that some people hate my writing. Perhaps my subject matter has been too dark. In an attempt to remedy this, I submit the following. The fluffy, blue-eyed kitten frolicked in the grass, tossing and batting at his plaything before chewing on it. The flailing of the hapless human was to no avail, only drawing the kitten's attention. Such are the winners and the losers in a post-apocalyptic world. There. That should make everybody happy in a bipartisan way. Prairie too. All righty then. Right after the break here, we have an example of Rick Santorum used to talk about after he would put down the corpse of his stillborn kid. I still can't get over that story. Rick Santorum's wife gave birth to a stillborn, I think it was stillborn, wasn't it stillborn? And brought it home, the corpse, so that the children could cuddle it. Oh, Jesus, God. But Rick Santorum, when he was a senator before he was thrown out, used to talk about standing aside from blocking human rights, legal rights, constitutional rights for gay folk to get married would be the same as, well, the next thing you know, if man married man, then the next thing you know, a man would marry dog, or dog would marry woman, or something. Well, I don't know. I've got something here. Maybe Rick was right.
More Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. All right, Rick Santorum, who's got to be one of the most deranged white people ever to get into the Senate or get anywhere for that matter. This is a guy who's it seems like his sole purpose for being in the Senate was to be a thorn in the side of folks who wanted to get married but are prohibited by law because they happen to be the same sex. Rick, apparently, like most right-wing jackasses, don't understand that it is the state that sanctions marriages, not Judaism, not Christianity, not Islam, not Hinduism. It is the state that sanctions marriage, in this country anyway. Now, if somebody wants to have a religious ceremony, go ahead. But what do you have to give the priest, the rabbi, or the imam, or the preacher before you walk down the aisle? That's right! A license issued by whom? The state where you're getting married. Since marriage is something sanctioned by the state, it therefore falls under the heading of contract. It also falls under the heading of certain unalienable rights as guaranteed by the United States Constitution, most notably equal protection under the law. It doesn't say equal protection under the law except for black people, or equal protection under the law except for gay people, equal protection except for women. No, it just says equal protection under the law, you dumbass Republican Christian freak balls. Don't you understand that? Of course you don't. So Rick Santorum spent his entire political career railing against gay folk. In the meantime, this strange man brought home from the hospital a stillborn fetus, his own. I don't know if they put it in a jar of formaldehyde or if they wrapped it up in a blanket, but they took it home so that his live children could cuddle it and talk to it. Can you imagine when these kids grow up? He also keeps on his desk, according to all the reports, a photograph of the dead fetus. I'm starting to feel queasy just talking about this. one of the things Rick Santorum said regarding gay people was, well, you know, if you let homosexuals get married, let men marry men, the next thing you know, it'll be man on dog. Man on dog. Well, here you go.
I think one of the strangest media stories I ever read was written by someone who went into his office, Santorum's office, to interview him and noticed a picture of what looked like a sleeping newborn child on his desk. And Santorum pointed at him and smiled and said, "That's my little guy."
Yeah, pretty sick. All right. On the slight possibility that in the parallel universe that this story came from, Rick Santorum might be right, or you can you can categorize this as Rick Santorum's wet dream. This is from someplace in India. I wish I could pronounce it. Bhubaneswar, India. An infant boy. Was married off to his neighbor's dog in eastern India by villagers who said it will stop the groom, the little boy, who's about 18 months old, from being killed by wild animals. About 150 tribespeople performed the ritual recently in a hamlet in the state of Orissa's Jaipur district after the boy, who was under 2 years old, grew a tooth on his upper gum. The Munda tribe see such a growth in young children as a bad omen and believe it makes them prone to attacks by tigers and other animals. The tribal god will bless the child and ward off evil spirits after the marriage to the dog. The boy's father, Sana Rumala Munda, was quoted by the local newspaper as saying, "We performed the marriage because it will overcome any curse that might fall on the child as well as on us." The groom was carried by his family in procession to the village temple, where a priest solemnized the marriage between the boy and his bride by chanting Sanskrit hymns, according to a witness. The villagers then ate a feast with rich food and alcohol to celebrate. The dog, now the wife of the boy, belongs to the groom's neighbors and was set free to roam around the area after the ceremony. No dowry was exchanged, the witness said, and the boy will still be able to marry a human bride in the future without filing for divorce. Indian law does not recognize weddings between people and animals, but the ritual survives in rural and tribal areas of the country where millions are illiterate. Well, there you go. Rick Santorum, I guess I just underestimated the power of your words and the truthfulness of your words, that next thing you know, it'll be man on dog. Of course, you didn't say infant on dog. But I think it's another example here of religious insanity gone berserk. Sort of like what you do, Rick. Oh, God. 18-year-old boy, or 18-month-old boy. That'll keep the haints away from him, right? Jeff in Phoenix writes, "Mike, I deliver a weekly magazine to a trucking dispatch company on my mail route. On last week's cover page, the heading of one article caught my eye. Tonnage drops 14% in December. That is an astonishing amount. It shows that people have really slowed down the purchasing of anything but food and the basics of life." Jeff in Phoenix. Tonnage being, you know, what is delivered by trucks. 14% drop. Right around Christmas. This from James in Seattle. Today, Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of the premier criminal operation known as J.P. Morgan Chase, when referring to President Obama's mortgage legislation, you know, this attempt by Barack Obama to assist people, Jamie Dimon suggested that homeowners need to be more, quote, responsible, end quote. And as James writes, wasn't that J.P. Morgan Chase, which colluded with Enron a few years back to hide $2.3 billion in loans to them and listed as commodity trades, thus committing fraud with regard to Enron's P&L statement, their corporate value, and their stock value. Wasn't that J.P. Morgan Chase? I think so. That would be the same J.P. Morgan Chase, which was one of the primary three corporations which financed the market company, which artificially valued all those industry-wide derivatives. Said derivatives, which J.P. Morgan Chase is exposed to, over $90 trillion, a category which one former Secretary of the U.S. Treasury, Hank Paulson, former alumnus of another criminal organization, Goldman Sachs, did refer to as toxic assets. Responsibility, anyone? We already know from research from the intrepid Naomi Prinz that of the criminal conspiracy of the Bush administration, working through the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, along with the criminal coalition of Wall Street rating firm Standard & Poor's, to enforce individual states to ignore their respective consumer lending laws and anti-predatory lending laws to allow that subprime mortgage scam to go forward. President Obama's mortgage legislation, while smaller than what is actually required, should have been undertaken several years previously had not we suffered under the Bush crime family. Likewise, several years ago, the Bush bunch should have seized the major banks and investment houses, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citicorp, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley, and cleaned up all their toxic assets, along with firing all the senior management CEOs and boards of directors. The time is truly late, James in Seattle. Yeah, isn't that a son of a bitch? This Jamie Dimon suggested that homeowners who are upside down or underwater or whatever the term is, and it doesn't make any difference how they got there. How many of these homeowners, if you listen to this freak on Wall Street, I'm sure today you saw the tape from CNBC, this weaselly little bastard just going absolutely insane over a bailout plan to help people in this country. This is so typical of these capitalist predators. You know what I'm referring to. But an attempt to undo the damage done by thugs like J.P. Morgan Chase and the rest of these rat bastards, and Jamie Dimon has the audacity to suggest that homeowners who might owe $80,000 more than their home is worth, or $100,000 or $200,000 because of what companies like J.P. Morgan Chase have done, and $200,000, you know what that is to Jamie Dimon? That's an afternoon at the racetrack. And this son of a bitch has the audacity to call that irresponsible. The same company which sucked $2.3 billion out of the public for the sake of Enron. Control yourself, Mike. Tell me how much she hates the things I do. She loves to lie beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. She's no lady.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, they go together like a horse and carriage. This I'll tell you, brother. You can't have one without the other.
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's an institute you can't disparage. It's about 10 before the hour. Ruth writes in, Mike, here in Arizona, about Chaseman, J.P. Morgan Chase. Mike, here in Arizona, I don't know about other states, but here in Arizona, if you want direct deposit, you have to. If you want direct deposit for your unemployment money, it has to go into a Chase account. You get a card from Chase. I guess it's pretty nice when you have the government depositing everyone's check in the, quote, government's bank, end quote, Ruth. Yeah, well, what did I hear? I've heard even on AP News and a couple other places that some of these banks now, of course, are charging. They're when when unemployment money is put in, they charge you 50 cents. Oh, never mind. Jesus. The banks need to be destroyed and taken over by the government. That's all. They need to be nationalized like in most civilized country, like the Bank of England or the Bank of Germany or whatever the hell it's called. They need this craziness, this predatory garbage by these unbelievably greedy, predatory white men who and boards of directors who just sit there and suck the lifeblood out of the country. Banks do nothing. They produce nothing. They cheat and lie and steal and take a cut of every transaction. They charge usury rates. Look at their credit card deals. Oh, my God. They need to be ended, just like the Republican Party. If we could get rid of the banks and the Republican Party at the same time, the country would be in much better shape, don't you think? Google Earth had a surprise for folks who were checking it out. Turns out that the United States has been secretly flying unmanned drones from the Shamsi Air Base in Pakistan's southwestern province of Baluchistan, going back as early as 2006. That's according to an image of the base from Google Earth. The image that is no longer on the site, but which was obtained by the News of the UK or the Times of the UK. Or no, I see. Okay, this was in the Times of the UK. It was the image obtained by the News, Pakistan's English language daily newspaper, shows what appear to be three Predator drones outside a hangar at the end of the runway. The Times of London of the UK also obtained a copy of the image, whose coordinates confirmed that it is the Shamsi airfield, about 200 miles southwest of the Pakistani city of Quetta. Yada, 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 yada. The Pakistani government said in 2006 that the Americans had left that area. Both sides have since denied repeatedly that Washington has used or is using Pakistani bases to launch drones that then go up in the air and kill people, lots of people. Pakistan has also demanded that the U.S. cease drone attacks on its tribal areas. But anyway, the Google Earth image now suggests that the U.S. began launching predators from this airbase at least 3 years ago. And it goes on. You can get this story if you want it. But now CBS News, there was a lot of discussion about this. Well, you know, somebody, this is like the "I'm coming for you" story. We don't have bases there. We never have, never will. All right. CBS News, though, says Pakistan, the U.S., and other NATO member countries have had a quiet, unwritten agreement for the past 3 to 5 years to allow the CIA to fly unmanned drones out of remote airstrips in the Pakistan-Afghanistan border area. That's according to a senior military official from a NATO country, confirmed today to CBS News. In the past week, speculation has mounted over the extent to which Pakistan was aware of such flights, amid evidence that at least some of the drones were being launched from airstrips in remote Pakistani regions. The issue is potentially explosive for Pakistan, a country that has been an ally to the U.S. Yada, yada, yada. On Thursday, today, the Islamabad-based NATO military official who spoke to CBS News on condition of anonymity said the U.S., Pakistan, and NATO had all collaborated in the use of remote locations in Pakistan to operate the drones. The official said, quote, "There is no single site you can name. We are looking at different locations both in Pakistan and Afghanistan. If the Shamsi Air Base has been found to be a home for the drones, that is not the only location." A NATO country diplomat stationed in Islamabad, who also spoke to CBS News on condition of anonymity, confirmed the information given by the military official. The diplomat said there is no one location. The locations keep on changing in both Pakistan and Afghanistan. But yes, there are drones flying from locations in both these countries. Now, speculation from people who are suspicious of this information, whether it comes from Google Earth or NATO diplomats or NATO military people or CBS News or Pakistan News Service or all combination of all, people who are suspicious of this are saying, well, this is the preparatory moves for a U.S. invasion of Pakistan. What? A U.S. invasion of Pakistan? No. No, that couldn't happen, could it? Well, there are several scenarios that say it could happen. Yes, it could. If the U.S. military, if the CIA is convinced that the recently elected civilian government of Pakistan that was elected to power after Musharraf was forced to resign, if the CIA feels that that government has become too shaky and is about to collapse, what are they going to do, the CIA? Because, you know, there are the nukes in Pakistan, nuclear bombs. So what would the CIA do? The excuse, of course, would be the nuclear weapons. The real casus belli, if you will, would be the fact that Pakistan has not been cooperating the way we want it to, and the damn pipeline isn't being built across Afghanistan. So let's go, boys! Saddle up! Time to invade yet another country! Welcome back to the Malloy program. Thanks for sticking around. I got a couple of emails during the break from people who just don't believe that Pakistan drone story. Again, if the story was planted by somebody, it obviously includes diplomats and military officers in NATO. And sources in Pakistan and sources in Afghanistan, and I guess to some extent, CBS News, not that CBS News gets it right, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. As far as Afghanistan is concerned, this escalation creep that's going on, a couple of comments here one from Marilyn Young, who's professor of history at New York University. She's the author of books including Iraq and the Lessons of Vietnam, or How Not to Learn from the Past. And most recently, she wrote Bombing Civilians, A 20th Century History. Marilyn Young said today, quote, "The uncertainty around Afghan policy seems to be spreading, yet the administration just announced an increase in troops. This is one of the ways events seem to echo U.S. escalation in the Vietnam War. Instead of saying, this is just not working, a military solution cannot succeed, nor is there a viable political solution the U.S. can engineer, the administration seems to have chosen to add troops incrementally and drone attacks exponentially." And Joe Volk, who is executive secretary of the Friends Service Committee on National Legislation, you've seen those bumper stickers that say a war is not the answer, and then FCNL.org. That's what it is. The Friends Committee on National Legislation. They sent a letter to Obama yesterday on this escalation. And Volk said today, quote, "Bombing civilians and wielding the barrel of a gun will only help extremists recruit more fighters. It failed in Iraq. It will fail in Afghanistan. What we need is diplomacy, development, and cooperation with China, Russia, Iran, Pakistan, India, and other important regional actors," end quote. Yeah, but you know, that requires the people in the diplomatic world to actually want peace. Right? Speaking of bombing, at my website today, and in the mini blog section, some stuff that was really shocking. I don't know if you went there and took a look at it. If you did, then you know what I'm talking about. A couple of comments on it. Roz writes, I read your blog today, Mike, and just after watching some of Norman Finkelstein's videos, and he tells it like it is, even though it has destroyed his career. Now, what do you think will happen if Netanyahu is made prime minister? Not a pretty picture. The whole world watched this genocide in Gaza, and nary a word of objection was raised. In fact, most of the EU and our prime minister here in Canada went along with the tired old line that Israel has a right to defend themselves. Maybe, but they certainly don't have the right to commit murder and kill off all the young. I really think that the U.S. and Israel are two of the most cruel countries around. England wore that crown for centuries, but they have taken a back seat to the aforementioned. Boy, what a sad world we're leaving behind to our kids and grandkids. And then Joel Weisberg, that's from Roz, and I mentioned Joel's entire name because that's how he signed it. Joel writes, Mike, I write you tonight to thank you for positing in your daily blog site the very moving article by a woman I would really like to know, my fellow Jew, Medea Benjamin. I began crying as I read her account of her recent visit to Gaza. The tears have only stopped as I began to write to you. Mike, the state of the Jewish community in the world today is an unmitigated disaster. In recent weeks, we have discovered that the world's biggest crook, Bernie Madoff, is Jewish. Another fraudster, Art Nadel, who recently disappeared with his wife and $500 million of his client's money, is also of my people. How about the criminals Jack Abramoff, Andy Fastow, and Scooter Libby? And the warmongering crew of Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Elliot Abrams, and Ari Fleischer. These swine have presided over the slaughter of more than a million Iraqi civilians, and the deaths and maiming of unknown thousands of U.S. soldiers, and then come this dastardly attack on Gaza by Israel. The bodies of the thousands of Lebanese civilians killed in the last act of aggression 2 years ago aren't even cold. And here is Israel, raining more carnage on innocent men, women, and as the horrific picture in the article sadly shows, children. I'm so sick of it, Mike. Medea Benjamin, I hold you in my heart. I wish I could join you on your next visit to Gaza. Please let those people know that there are Jews out here who care about them and their suffering. Thanks again, Mike, for taking on this cause. Longtime fan, Joel Weisberg. If you saw one of those pictures in particular, and you are a parent, I think it will be, as Medea Benjamin stated in her article, that it is a picture that will stay with her the rest of her life. Writing Alternet posted today, she says, when I traveled to Gaza last week, everywhere I went, a photo haunted me. I saw it in a brochure called Gaza Will Not Die that Hamas gives out to visitors at the border crossing. A poster-sized version was posted outside a makeshift memorial at the Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. And now that I'm back home, the image comes to me when I look at children playing in the park, when I glance at the school across the street, when I go to sleep at night. It is a photo of a young Palestinian girl who is literally buried alive in the rubble from a bomb blast, with just her head protruding from the ruins. Her dark eyes are closed, her mouth partially open, as if she were in a deep sleep. Dried blood covers her lips, her cheeks, her hair. Someone with a glove is reaching down to touch her forehead, showing one final gesture of kindness in the midst of such inhumanity. What was this little girl's name, I wonder? How old was she? Was she sleeping when the bomb hit her home? Did she die a quick death or a slow, agonizing one? Where are her parents, her siblings? How are they faring? Of the 1,330 Palestinians killed by the Israeli military during the 22 invasion of Gaza, 437 were children. Let me repeat that. 437 and 37 were children, each as beautiful and precious as our own. As a Jew, an American, and a mother, I felt compelled to witness firsthand what my people and my tax dollars had done during this invasion. Visiting Gaza filled me with unbearable sadness. Unlike the primitive weapons of Hamas, the Israelis had so many sophisticated ways to murder, maim, and destroy. Unmanned drones, F-16s dropping smart bombs that miss, Apache helicopters launching missiles, tanks firing from the ground, ships shelling Gaza from the sea. So many horrific weapons stamped with Made in the USA. While Hamas's attacks on Israeli villages are deplorable, Israel's disproportionate response is unconscionable, with 1,330 Palestinians dead versus 13 Israelis. If the invasion was designed to destroy Hamas, it failed miserably. Not only is Hamas still in control, but it retains much popular support. If the invasion was designed as a form of collective punishment, it succeeded, leaving behind a trail of grieving mothers, angry fathers, and traumatized children. To get a sense of the devastation, check out a slideshow circulating on the internet called Gaza, Massacre of Children. It should be required viewing for all who supported this invasion of Gaza. Babies charred like shish kebabs, limbs chopped off, features melted from white phosphorus, faces crying out in pain, gripped by fear, overcome by grief. Anyone who can view these slides and still repeat the mantra that Israel has a right to self-defense, or Hamas brought this upon its own people, or worse yet, the Israeli military didn't go far enough. Anyone who can say these things does a horrible disservice not only to the Palestinian people, but to humanity. And there's more. You can read it if you like. She's going back there on March 7 with a large international delegation to bear witness as an American Jew and someone who was the founder of Code Pink and someone who believes in peace and justice, honor, and the sanctity of children. We'll let you know what she finds next time.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 22 past the hour. I was going to, after Obama was sworn as president, I was just going to try to ignore this bloated piece of human waste, Limbaugh. Rush, death by temptation, Limbaugh. But since he's now the head of the Republican Party, proclaimed as such by himself, of course, and by key Republicans, you know, you can't ignore the head of a political party. So based on that, we occasionally will drop a piece of his commentary into the program. This is from today. You know, he's not content to wish that Obama and consequently the entire United States economy and all of us fails. That's what he said. He wants everything to fail. The oxymoron now compares Democrats who support the stimulus bill to murderers and rapists And he claims Democrats are going to establish a separate rule for themselves than those that apply to a Republican. This is the ravings of an absolute goddamn lunatic. I mean, this guy is crazier than an outhouse rat. Well, here you listen.
Answer your question, why do so many liberal Democrats want to basically tear apart and rebuild the country? It's because they don't control enough of it to satisfy them. They want to...
They live here, too. I don't understand. Like,
Well, they are going to establish separate rules for themselves by which they live, such as they'll be able to not pay their taxes and work in government at high levels.
Oh, my God.
They're not going to be subject to whatever greenhouse gas laws there are. They're not going to be subject to any of this sort of... They have... Because they're too important, you see.
Oh.
And they all think they're part of the elite. Some of them are going to get canned. Some of them are going to get the shaft here. They just don't know it. But today, forget Democrat. These people are liberal socialists now. They bear no resemblance to the Democrat Party of John Kennedy, for example.
No, you're right. You're right. I agree. I agree.
It's about power. It's about control. These people genuinely look out over this country from their lofty perch. They don't like what they see. Otherwise,
well, then they can go somewhere else. Like, I don't understand. Why do they have to stay here?
I don't.
Like, leave us alone.
We're at this point. At this point, Gretchen, I don't care about the why. They're not going to leave. They're trying to control it. At this point, the only thing is they must be stopped.
I agree.
Within the confines of our Constitution and the political arena of ideas, they must be stopped. I don't care why they see this country the way they see it. I don't care why a murderer does it. I don't care why a rapist does it. I don't care why this Muslim guy offed his wife's head. The now gang's out there saying, oh, that's not domestic violence. That's just what'd they call it? Culturally honor killing. This woman was going to divorce him. That's against the law. And that says his diversity. I don't care. I don't care why anymore. I mean, if I figure it out, I'll be glad to tell you because it's interesting to know, but it doesn't matter in terms of defeating them.
This is a raving psychopath. And did you hear the poor woman? You hear the poor woman. I don't understand. You know, Rush is saying to this poor woman that Democrats are going to establish separate rules for themselves. They're not going to have to pay taxes. They're not going to be subject to whatever greenhouse gas laws there are. You see, Democrats will be able to drive Hummers, and Republicans will be forced to drive what? Yugos or Volkswagen. This son of a bitch is insane. And you heard the caller. You hear this woman. Ah! Just pushed right to the brink of absolute panic. Oh, Rush! Oh, my God, my panties are all wet. I just peed myself. What do I do, Rush? Please. Ah, ah, ah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't care. I don't care why a murderer does it or why a rapist does it. I don't care. I don't care why anymore. If I figure it out, I'll be glad to tell you because it's interesting. But it doesn't matter in terms of defeating them. We got to defeat them.
I like the collar.
I don't care.
Why can't they just go away and leave us alone?
I don't care anymore. You know, rapists, murders.
Leave America.
I don't care. No, it doesn't make any difference. You know, they won't have to pay their taxes like we will. They, you know, they'll be able to jaywalk. You know, we'll get a ticket. They'll be able to walk any goddamn place. Well, did I say goddamn? I'm sorry. I'm a Christian. You know Rush's problem? If he would just come out of the closet and relax, that's all he has to do. Come on out, Rush. It's okay.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
$20. 25 before the hour here. I've got to have something to clean out my mind and yours, too. I know. How about another episode of Bridget Speaks? Hi, Mike. Somewhere between the latest bleak news on the financial front and the outrage of that revolting political cartoon yesterday, I was in the greenhouse planting seeds that I hope will germinate and turn into vegetable plants for my garden this summer. Any gardening activity leaves me in a contemplative mood, but planting seeds more than most because I'm always aware of the old adage, biblical probably, as you sow, so shall you reap. Or a bit more prosaically, if you put a cucumber seed in the ground, you're not going to get chrysanthemums. The concept of you reap what you sow gets expressed in lots of other ways as well, like what goes around comes around, sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. And now we begin to venture into karma territory rather than genetic imperatives. The reason I was inclined to wander in this direction today has to do with my frustration with how gracious and bipartisan Obama continues to be to pit vipers, who would as soon inject poison in the jugular of the President of the United States and do anything that might actually help the country. And it occurred to me that I think our president is a gardener. He has seen what grows when you plant and nurture the seeds of elitism, racism, condescension, hatred, arrogance, duplicity, narcissism, intolerance, and the whole genus of similar growths. Any actual seed that will grow, even the weeds, have something to give to some creature to sustain life. But the seeds planted by the rabid right only grow into ideas and behaviors that suffocate and poison life. I think Obama knows that and is determined to plant a different crop. He seems to be searching for soil fertile enough to grow what he brings and is having trouble finding that. It's good, I think, that he is taking lots of trips out of Washington, D.C. That soil has been so eroded and stripped of nutrients, I'm not sure that much of anything can grow there, despite the amount of bull manure that gets spread around on a regular basis. Anyone who's ever put too much manure on a garden knows how easily that scorches the plants. I've decided that rather than getting frustrated with Obama, I'm going to take a lesson from my own gardening experience. I'm going to let him know how happy I am with what he does when he does things that feed me, like reverse gag rules, cancel the delisting of wolves, tackle the financial disaster he's inherited, promise to close Guantanamo, stop torture. Okay, I know there are some really questionable decisions out there as well. I don't know how to relate to those yet, but I think I'm willing to watch and see. Most of my seeds will take 2 to 3 months at least before they will begin to produce food, and I'm willing to give Obama a little time. Sun Bear, a Northwest Native American teacher, was reputed to have told a student, "You want to learn magic? Take a seed of corn, plant it in the ground, water it. It will grow into food that will feed the people. That's magic." From what I can see, that's the kind of magic Obama is trying to bring to the country. We'll see whether the seeds he's trying to plant will grow into stronger plants than the destructive flesh-eating genus that calls itself Republican. I tend to think there's at least a chance. Corn, at least if it's not genetically modified, feeds the people better than ashes. All the best, Bridget. This is from Massachusetts. I think it's Massachusetts. From the, what newspaper is this? I picked this story up at Infowars.com. That's Alex Jones, isn't it? Yeah. It says two students were arrested and another 15 to 20 staged a sit-in at Old Rochester Regional High School yesterday in a protest that began after students briefly commandeered the intercom system. Thomas Buckley, 17, Zachary Sherman, 17, were charged with disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, and disturbing the school. They were arraigned in district court and released on personal recognizance. Pre-trial is set for June 27th, according to police. The incident unfolded around 8:30 in the morning when two to five students used a special code to access the school-wide intercom via a classroom system. According to high school principal Sheila Haskins, one of the students read a passage from something they apparently were studying in an English or history class. Exactly what they read over the intercom wasn't clear, but Miss Haskins said it might have been excerpts from a Fidel Castro speech. That was reflected in the police reports. However, students said it was a passage from Orwell's novel, 1984. Miss Haskins said the intercom announcement was likely part of a senior prank. She said, well, there wasn't anything threatening, nothing that would cause any panic or alarm. The superintendent said that although the announcement was a disturbance to the 9th and 10th graders taking tests, it should not affect the outcome of the test, as students are given as much time as they need to finish. After the intercom announcement, Ms. Haskins, the principal, gathered the senior students in the cafeteria to speak about appropriate behavior and consequences if they acted out, according to a press release from the Mattapoisett police. And it goes on. There were no fights, nothing. Some kids commandeered the PA system and began reading 1984. And irony upon irony upon irony to the point where it makes you dizzy. The students were arrested for reading 1984.
Whew. No, Mike, they were arrested for disrupting the school.
Oh, that's right. That's right. At Alex Jones's site, there's some related articles. Let me just read the titles. Minnesota cops and the school district agree it's okay to use tasers on students. New York students occupy new school building. Anti-war students walk out of school. Public school teacher and students vote autistic kid out of class. Police taser 15-year-old boy at high school. Schools to put students in prison jumpsuits as punishment. U.S. school district to begin microchipping students. Indiana high school's purse ban rankles students. Student arrested for terrorist story in English class. Student arrested for classroom texting. Students and the teacher vote I read the story. It's a young kid, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 years old, voted out of a public high school class because he's autistic. And he's not even autistic, not full-blown autism. He has Asperger's syndrome. Wow. I'm trying to process that. I'm trying to read that story that was sent to me from Massachusetts about, some high school kids commandeered at 8:30 in the morning. Commandeered. Do you like that word? I've always liked that word. Commandeered. You know, it makes me think of people dropping out of black helicopters down ropes, you know, with hoods over their faces and MAC-10s on their backs, and, you know, come crashing through a skylight. That's commandeered to me. But here, high school students, two 17-year-olds, commandeered at 8:30 in the morning. The school's PA system. Uh-oh. And started reading 1984, the novel. And were arrested. And you know where the cops were from? Obviously, the cops were from the Ministry of Truth.
Redefining Anger Management, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. From Jan in Madison, Wisconsin, who writes, Dear Mike, the wallpaper on my computer is a photograph of my new grandson, born February 11th. There he lies in his hospital bassinet, little fist in his mouth, eyes wide open, as if trying to figure out where he is. I looked at the pictures of the dead and injured children from Gaza. I made myself look at them, despite the fact that I'm ill with a bad cold and I'm tired and I need to go to bed soon. I made myself look at those photos because my grandson is alive and healthy and safe, and those children are dead and maimed and terrified, and their parents and siblings are grief-stricken and horrified. I made myself look at the photographs because I don't want to be just another unconcerned American too wrapped up in my email or television or video games to take a few minutes to understand what the hell is happening in the rest of the world. I'll send letters to the president and my state senator and representative asking that the United States openly condemn the murders of these people in Gaza, and in particular the murders of the innocents whose faces are now haunting me. I'll ask that we quit supporting Israel. It won't do any good, but I have to do something now. I've seen the pictures. I know I will think of those little ones often, especially when I'm holding my little grandson in my arms. God help them. God help us all. Jan in Madison. If you can do it, and not everybody can, do it. The links are at MikeMalloy.com on the little mini blog page that occasionally I will actually put something there. Oh, man. All right, we're going to take some phone calls now. If you'd like to join in, the number here is 800-989-1480. We'd like to hear from you. 800-989-1480. Michael is calling from, oh my God, he's been holding on for an hour. Michael's calling from the Bronx, listening on the internet. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm a little under the weather. The weather keeps going seesaw, up, down, up, down. I'm fighting a cold. Like I said, I'm a little under the weather now. I'm trying to get over it.
Yeah, you and about 10 million of us.
Oh, goodness.
But the real reason you called.
The real reason is because it's funny you mentioned about the New York Post cartoon that has a lot of people outraged that appeared yesterday.
Uh-huh.
I'm one of those that outraged, and then I hear these idiots like the right wingers who's one like, "What is the big deal?" Let me break it down to three important points. Number one, for years, the black people have been referred to as chimps, monkeys, and apes. That's number one. Number two, this idea of the stimulus plan, you know that was a direct swipe towards Barack Obama, mm-hmm. and which, by the way, had this been some kind of a joke leveled towards Bush while he was in the White House, the Secret Service would have been all over the authors of the cartoonists. And number three, and what's most importantly, is the cops that were depicted in here shooting down a chimp, or in this case, a black person. We've had that problem so many times here in New York City with unarmed, law-abiding, innocent people of color being gunned down by trigger-happy cops who always jump to conclusions, always assuming. And you know what happens when people assume.
Right.
Now, you know what's so you know, I find so amazing about this, Mike, is that I'm surprised I'm not hearing anything from the NYPD, the New York Police Department, about this cartoon. I mean, every time they're involved in some kind of controversial shooting or some kind of incident involving a civilian, they're always saying the cops is a tragedy, not a crime. Give the cops the benefit of the doubt. They're always making themselves like they're so doggone flawless. And yet this cartoon, if you took a look, a real close look at it, the cartoon depicts the cops as the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yes, I'm surprised I haven't heard anything from the NYPD. It only tells me of where their true mentality is at. I mean, if they are so sincere as they always try to place themselves as, they will have been joining the chorus of outrage and defending themselves, don't you think?
Well, I guess, Michael, I think anyway, I don't care if they're a cop or a college professor or a gas station jockey. It doesn't make any difference. People, white people, simply, most white people, not all, for God's sake, not all, but most white people, the vast, vast majority, 95%, will look at that cartoon and not understand what people of color or people who believe in justice or people who believe in fair play, what they're getting so upset about. You know, white folks will look at that and go, oh, yeah, it's supposed to be Obama. That's kind of funny. No, I'm not racist. You know, I've got lots of black friends. I know this lady that lives down the street, black woman, but real nice. Didn't you always like that part? I have this black friend, but she's real nice. You know, white people always added that, but she's real nice. Well, really? As opposed to what? So, Michael, I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate you checking in. We've got a break coming here. I'm going to have to move on. But don't ever expect the majority of white people to get it, especially white people in positions of power, because they will do that. They do that all the time. Oh, wow, what's everybody upset about? Just a goddamn cartoon? I thought it was kind of funny. It's not funny? Oh, okay. Well, I think you people, are being very too sensitive. You know, just too sensitive. My God. I mean, really. I mean, what's wrong with you people? Welcome back. 7 past the hour. I hope somebody will have the humanity to pursue members of the Bush administration for the crimes against humanity that they committed. Lou in Arkansas points something out. It's totally out of context what we're talking about tonight, but it does point out the necessity of bringing Bush and his cohorts to justice somewhere, sometime, somehow. Lou writes, every time I hear a right-wing nutcase extolling how wondrous it was for Bush to save the Iraqi people from the mass murderer Saddam Hussein, it simply shows me again the absolute stupidity of these animals. Hussein was convicted and executed for the murder of 138 people. The first bomb dropped on Baghdad by the Bush Nazis that preceded the two-week shock and awe abomination was a bunker buster from a Navy jet, dropped allegedly to kill Saddam and his two sons. It was unsuccessful, but it did murder 135 people sleeping in an apartment building next door. Yeah. Yeah, somebody has to. If you want to know how it's proceeding in this country, since nobody in the Democratic Party has the courage, I don't think it's a matter of decency or sense of justice. It's courage, all the way up to the office of the president on this one. Since no one in the Democratic Party has the courage to cleanse the country of these sons of bitches, to use our system of justice to demonstrate that we are a nation of laws. Since no one will do that in the Democratic Party, maybe there is a prosecutor out there of the 2,200 that have received books from Bob Alexander and the prosecute George Bush for murder folks. Maybe justice will be served. And if you haven't been to the website, go prosecutegeorgebush.com. Go take a look at this. prosecutegeorgebush.com. All right. To your phone calls. The number again is 800-989-1480. Bob is calling from Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Mike, and all the truth seekers.
Hey, how you doing?
This week you've talked quite a bit about the war in Afghanistan and Maya Benjamin. Her letter tonight moved me. I'd like you to know that I'm already against the next war. You know, a wise young man once sang, the riot squad is restless. They need somewhere to go. The capitalist military industrial political complex needs to continue its cycle of production, destruction, production, destruction. It's profitable. We will not succeed in challenging the war machine until we challenge war itself. It is possible to truly support the people in the armed services if they are considered victims who are trapped by cultural mythology, custom, propaganda, and their own good intentions rather than as troops. True self-defense is justifiable. But, Mike, there is absurdity in the concept of war crimes. All war is a crime. 80%+ of casualties in war are civilians. If one must fight, then as little violence as possible, as much as necessary. But there are no Queensberry rules. Every soldier is named Cain. In vain he slays his brother. Gives his mother endless tears, sows fears in all the people, stains the steeple red with blood. In a flood of death drowns love, trades a dove for a vulture, creates a culture of doom, spreads gloom among the children, and then expects a medal.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. There is no doubt about it. Bob, thanks. I appreciate what you wrote. Thank you. Appreciate you checking in. Jonathan is calling from Manhattan. Jonathan, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Mike. How are you, man?
I'm all right. How you doing?
All right. I listen to you all the time. You're my favorite because you get loud and you're the only one who's been angry as I am for the past 4 years. Years, actually. But here's the quick synopsis. My name is actually Jonathan McCain, right? I'm an African-American. I'm not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
So I was contacted about a month before the election from all these newspapers. I got a call from the New York Post. They came over. They interviewed me. I live in New York, lower Manhattan, shall we say, in a very nice apartment building, right?
Right.
So they come over. They interview me. Everything's fine. Two nice little college white guys, really nice, sweet kids.
Your slave name is McCain.
Yeah, so exactly. So they come over, they interview me. So they come here. I'm in Manhattan now.
Right,
so then
right.
When they take it back to the editor, when the article finally appears in the newspaper,
mm-hmm.
I go on at length about all the problems in the world. North Korea, Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, India, you get the point.
Mm-hmm.
When I was asked, why are you going to vote for him?
Right.
So I listed all of these things, and I said he'd be the best man for the thing.
Right.
So when the article finally comes out, I see the article. They don't mention that. They just say, I think he's going to be the best guy. Right? But that's beyond. They say the Brooklyn-based musician. The guys came to my house and interviewed me in Manhattan, but when they took it back to their editor, I became a Brooklyn-based musician.
What?
You want to know why?
Yeah, go ahead. Why?
Black man can't be from Manhattan. Don't you know that?
Right.
They wanted all their racist readers, because the Post is a racist rag,
right,
to know. Subconsciously, on some level, you can live in Manhattan, but don't worry.
So they were intrigued how somebody named McCain was going to vote for somebody named Obama.
Yeah, that was the whole stick of the
right.
story. But the why? They took it back to their editor, Mike. Why did I have to be from Brooklyn? They knew I was from Manhattan.
Well, did you call the public editor or whatever they have?
I didn't.
No?
You know, I was so disgusted by it. I should have complained. I mean,
right.
they did use my likeness and my name and exploited me for the story.
Right.
But at the same time, I was so disgusted. Why did I have to be from Brooklyn?
Well, yeah, I think your answer. What did your friends say?
Everybody was mind blown.
Yeah.
I got calls from everywhere. What do you mean you're from Brooklyn? I think there was a typo. Was there a typo? Like, no, they interviewed me in my living room in my very nice apartment. They didn't mention any of that. But, Mike, keep doing what you're doing. I love you, man. You've been fighting for so long. Keep sticking it to them, man.
Okay, Jonathan.
All right.
Take care. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Take care, man. Take care. Oh, he's from Brooklyn.
What's the matter with Brooklyn?
Oh, come on. What do you mean, what's the matter with Brooklyn?
Well, it's not Manhattan.
Do we have friends in Brooklyn? No, our friends.
Your daughter lived in Brooklyn.
For a while, but.
For a lot of roaches that lived with her.
That's right. That's true. No, our friends live in Queens. We used to have friends in Manhattan, but nobody could afford to live there anymore.
I remember the closet we stayed in when we visited there.
In Manhattan?
Yeah. It was literally. Molly slept in the closet. I'm not kidding. Molly slept in a closet.
That was an apartment on the Upper East Side. What do you expect? A friend of a friend had an apartment and let us use it while we were there, trying to get hired by Sirius Satellite Radio. I think
that was a fun trip. That wasn't the oh my God, who's employing us today trip.
I know, that's true. That's right. There was no job pitch there. But
Molly was in a closet. I had to move the clothes left and right to fit her little porta-crib in there.
It was a tiny apartment. It had a great view, though. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
War on terrorism. War against terrorism.
Global war on terror.
Global terrorism. 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 Global terrorism.
Terrorism. Terrorism.
Terrorism. Terrorism.
Terrorism. Terrorism.
Terrorism. Terrorism. Terrorism.
Evil terrorists.
Terrorists.
terrorist.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That sounds like a fair trade. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Ross is calling from California, listening on XM. Hey, Ross.
Yes, sir. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I'm probably going to lose my signal here pretty soon. I'm a truck driver. I'm rolling down the road here. But, hey, love your show. You get me down the road, bud. I just want to let you know I listened to the Tom Hartman show earlier this evening, and he had made a statement that Nancy Pelosi had a press interview or something today and was asked a question about the prosecutions against the Bush administration.
Uh-huh.
And he said that she said that that they're going to answer to the people and the prosecutions were going to move forward. So maybe they're listening to us now.
Well, I haven't heard anything about that.
Well, I heard it on Tom Hartman's show. And
well, then it has to be true.
So I just wanted to drop that on you. And,
yeah, well, maybe in the context of what she was saying, Ross, it made some sense, but I think if Nancy Pelosi would have, and this is no reflection on the Hartman program or on what you heard.
Right.
I'm saying context is everything, but maybe the point I'm trying to get to, if Pelosi had just come out and said, yeah, we're going to pursue the war criminals or whatever language she wanted to use, it'd be all over the news. It'd be the lead story. It would be, you know, Rush Limbaugh would blow an artery. Yeah. New York Post or New York Times, I should say, would have it on the top of the newspaper above the fold. It'd be a huge headline tomorrow. CNN would have been gasping all over the place. Wolf Blitzer would have been choking on his that beard of his. It never seems to grow. I wish he'd shave it off. You know, he looks like one of those mullahs who just haven't grown the beard yet. I don't know. The whole thing is crazy. All right. Well, listen, Ross, maybe I'll send an email to Tom and ask him, you know, what the story was about. All right?
Yeah, because he got on there and he said, man, do I have good news for you listeners today? And he come off with that, and I got, oh, man, I just was smiling from ear to ear.
Well, there must be something to it because Hartman is pretty careful, I think, in what he puts on the air. I'll check it out. Thanks, Ross.
Okay. You have a good one, Mike.
All right, man. You too. Drive safely. Drive safely. That'd be interesting. Have you heard anything about that? Huh?
Oddly, no. I have not heard, but I've had my head wrapped around 20 other things today. So it's possible that Nancy Pelosi is calling for the prosecution, and I just missed it.
Well, is it your turn to write to Hartman?
Oh, sure. I love Tom. I'll write to him anytime.
Yeah, send him an email. Just say, what the hell is this all about? Emma is calling from Milwaukee, listening on the mic.
Now yeah.
Out of
Madison. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm all right, Emma. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm going to give you some information about those plans for prosecution.
Yeah?
Representative John Conyers Jr., he's the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee.
Right.
And I believe it was January 26th. He released a 487-page report titled The Imperial Presidency, and it just lays it all out. It's beautiful.
I've
got to read it. It's long, but it's beautiful.
I'm familiar with that, but you know, Conyers is the chairman of the committee. He's not the Speaker of the House, and you know, if Nancy Pelosi, who infamously said that impeachment is off the table, if she has made some kind of a statement or suggestion that Bush and his criminals be pursued, that would be different from John Conyers saying it. You understand what I mean?
Yes, totally.
Right.
Understand. Obama is pushing back the subpoena, or I guess enforcing the subpoena that was given to Karl Rove.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about that?
Yes.
So hopefully he might show up and do what we would all be required to do as American citizens.
Well, I hope something like that would happen, Emma, but you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people in hell that hope that there'll be a Dipper Dan franchise open down there too. Except I don't believe in hell. But anyway, thanks, Emma. I appreciate the information, and that's another one. I will watch for that story. I want to see what Ross was talking about. Now, what you brought up too. I'm familiar with what Conyers reported. Apparently, Conyers, though, has been told by his speaker, Nancy Pelosi, not to go there. I don't know anymore. I just know that if we do not, if the United States does not, if the government of the United States does not pursue the war criminals that were in charge of this country for 8 years and who have committed so much murder and torture and destruction, then this country's doomed. You can't do that and retain any kind of even a hint of moral authority or ethical standing anywhere. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 25 before the hour. Okay, thanks. Thanks, everybody. You can stop now. Yeah, apparently Pelosi gave an interview to Rolling Stone where this issue came up. It's at it's at Think Progress and Talking Points Memo, and it was on Oberman tonight and Hartman this afternoon. And just do a Google search through the news on Pelosi prosecution, and you'll have, I think there's about 100 links that come up. Okay, back to your phone calls. Tim is calling from Phoenix, listening on 1190. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Tim.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right.
I'm wondering about the petition to the district attorneys. I'm kind of wondering what good that would do, since that would be out of the normal county attorney's jurisdiction.
No, it really isn't. If you read Vince Bugliosi's book, Vince Bugliosi, former prosecutor of Los Angeles County, the guy who put Charles Manson in prison, if you read his book, he very clearly lays out the case. George W. Bush took the country to war based on lies. Uh-huh. And outside the requirements of the Constitution, therefore George W. Bush violated the law. Now, anybody who served in the military from the various counties and states around the country who lost their lives because of George Bush's lies, then Bush is in jeopardy of being charged with murder. I'm not a lawyer. Vince Bugliosi is. He's a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. He prosecuted hundreds of cases when he was in L.A. County. He's a Republican.
Yeah, I read his book on.
That has the answer for you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, you bet. Daniel is calling from Phoenix, also listening on 1190. Well, my goodness. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going.
Well, let me make a few points. It might get a little bit heated, but I'd like to get these points out real quick. coming from a person who served his country in the military.
Now, wait, hold on just a second. I don't do the program that way. If you have some points to make, let's take them one at a time.
Okay, let's do that.
It's not a platform for people to just call in and spew a bunch of stuff out. So go ahead, make a point.
Okay, first point. Coming from a person who served in the military, served under our President Clinton, and the person who continues to serve the country as a police officer, I take it from your comments, you've never put your life on the line for your country.
Oh, I put my life on the line every day. I've been threatened more times than you can imagine.
Have you served in the military?
No.
Okay.
No. What's that got to do with Bush?
Well, here's my second point. Because of the comments...
No, wait. Answer the first one first. What's that got to do with Bush, whether or not I've served in the military? Has Rush served in the military? Has Hannity? Has Cheney? Has George W. Bush? Has any member of the Bush crime family that felt secure in sending thousands of people to their deaths based on lies? Did they serve in the military?
No.
Not okay. Answer the question, or I'm going
to
hang up. Answer the question.
Okay, well, I'm trying to answer the question.
No. A simple yes or no. Did any of the people I just mentioned ever serve in the military?
Well, would you like an answer?
No, answer the question. One last chance.
Question, George.
All right, get him out of here. Get him out of here. I don't want to hear this nutball. What's wrong with you people? See, again, once again, always. You try to be polite to these people. Hello, welcome to the program, crazy person. What do you have to say? Have you ever served in the military? What the hell has that got to do with the crimes of George W. Bush? Jesus Christ.
I was a Girl Scout.
Yeah, I know you were. But it's a typical flummoxed right-winger who doesn't know what the hell to do. Well, I served in the military, and I'm a cop, so therefore I get to ask you things, and you know, you're going to by God answer, no, I'm not. You know, if you ever pull me over for speeding in Phoenix and you want to ask me something, then you'll have the power, but not on this program. So, again, you know, I try. I always try. Okay, ask the question. Let's go slowly. You ask. I'll answer. Oh, no. Because you might answer, Mr. Malloy, by really embarrassing me, make me feel like a dumbass because of my question. Have I served in the military? I didn't commit 150,000 people to invade a country in violation of international law. So what the hell does my having or not having served in the military have to do with anything, you idiot? What's wrong with you? Do you call Limbaugh the filthy pig man and ask him that question? He supported every war this country's ever been in, but he had a boil on his ass, so he wouldn't go. Jesus. How many Cheney deferments were there, Mr. Cop Man? Huh? How many? Four? He's the one that said he had better things to do than go join the military. So get off my radio station, get off my program, and don't call me again. What's wrong with you people? Jesus. I mean, see, it never, ever fails. I go for it every time. Somebody wants to bring this issue up. Oh, okay. Hi. Welcome to the program. Get the hell out of here. Jesus.
I think that boil on Limbaugh's behind might have eaten him. I've had to watch a minute of video someone sent me of him, you know, gesticulating on the behind the golden EIB microphone, and I have never seen him that
doing what?
Ginormous.
Doing what behind the golden EIB microphone?
Gesticulating.
Oh, that. Yeah, well.
But it was hard to tell. I mean, he's really, really getting into that, you know, the Viola Beauregard Oompa Loompa juicing room phase. It's really scary looking.
Well, you know.
And I only mentioned that reference because I just watched that for the 19th time with Molly the other day.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. Oh, Limbaugh. You know, Limbaugh never would have been allowed in the military anyway because of the crazy don't ask, don't tell nonsense. That's the reason he wouldn't have been allowed. Oh, he would have been allowed in until, you know, the first time they caught him in the shower with somebody. And then they would have said, what are you doing? you know, as unfair as it is. You know, I've said before and I'll say it again. Rush Limbaugh would probably calm down if he would just come out of the closet and stop living in this life of deep denial where anything anybody tries to do for this country is somehow a commie plot or a liberal plot or a socialist plot. You know, the only plot is, I better not say that. But if he would just relax, take a deep breath, you know, and sucking those cigars is not going to help. Not at all, eh, Rushy? Huh?
Hey, you better watch out. Gay men all across America just threw up in their mouths a little bit.
Well, nothing I can do
about
that.
Not a good visual.
Nothing I can do about that. I mean, that's one of the most open secrets in broadcasting, you know, is Russia's deeply closeted sexual orientation. But, you know, that has nothing to do with anything except, like, so many people who are ashamed of who they are, the way Limbaugh is. And they get into this kind of perverse, you know, like the ministers who are actually gay, and they get out and start talking about, well, we're going to repair gay people. You know, it's just insane. It's just insane. And that's all I'm saying. All Limbaugh has to do, and I'm sure America, gay America, straight America, liberal America, conservative America, you know, would probably embrace him if he ever fell down on the floor and started weeping and wailing and saying, you know, I was a drug addict. You know, I made myself deaf. You know, I sent my housekeeper out to score drugs. You know, and you know what else? It's all because I don't know what to do if people find out about me. I'm ruined. No, you're not, Rush. You won't be ruined at all. You'd be welcome into the family of humankind, you know. Just stop being such a dishonest son of a bitch. That's all. Embrace your inner self. If you can get your arms around it, that is. Because, you know, you're pretty big there, aren't you, dude? Back to your phone calls. I hate to get off on that. Michael is calling from Springfield, Illinois, listening on Sirius. Hey, Michael.
Oh, Michael, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. American by way of Ireland, by the way, as a kid.
I never would have guessed.
Years old and an ex-New York lawman, by the way, and a veteran. Okay.
Yeah, okay. All
so
right.
I got a little time here. I wanted to bring up just one point of this tonight. You're wrong about the casualties in Iraq. If you went to the Lancet report, that's the British intelligence report. It's 1.2 million civilians in Iraq. Okay?
Yeah.
One of my close friends in New York, Mike, sorry to interrupt you, and God bless you, by the way. You're doing a great job.
No problem, Michael.
They have Freddie Reber was the hell trial dude in the Nuremberg trials, right? And he used to drink in one of the watering holes in New York when I was working there.
Yeah.
I'm back there anyway every year for a few weeks, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking about the Nuremberg trials and stuff in 2003. And he was wondering, one of these days, do you think they'll ever get, like, Bush and Cheney, the draft dodgers, and a whole pile of them? Right. I says, I don't think so, because I speak to some of the people that I rub shoulders with actually are, for instance, envoys and stuff from other countries, including a personal friend, which is rare for an Irish guy, by the way, Christina Baskerville, the British Empire in New York City, right? But here's my point. I bumped into in Queens. I had a house in Queens, and I still rent it out in Woodside. And the Arabs were next door to me, the Egyptians. They wanted to borrow all my stuff from me and my tenants one Sunday. And we started talking about torture and all that. This is 2003 now. Listen to this.
Yeah.
They said one of their cousins was tortured by Mubarak. Like, they hated us giving money.
Right.
A couple of billion dollars to Egypt.
Right.
And one of the ways they torture was, because I was talking about torture about the IRA, what the British Army did, which is kicked out of Northern Ireland now, because we broke them, really.
Yeah.
We just killed two or three of them a week. But we broke them. That's what happened. They couldn't afford £5 or £6 billion, right? And they're the only ones that kept the pounds.
Yeah.
The other, you know, 27 countries in Europe are euro now, right?
Right, right.
But anyway, they were telling me what happened to the cousin. I says, the British would just put you in the wall, I said, like my brother. And when you fell down, they gave you an injection, brought you back and stuff like that. And sometimes they were right. They had the right guy. Sometimes they didn't. They
right.
made a lot of sweeps like we do in Afghanistan and in Iraq. But this is very interesting. They said they came back with one arm with nothing but a skeleton. I said, what's that all about? And they said, well, they would handcuff him inside a barrel of boiling water until the flesh fell off his. And they were furious about us giving all this money. Here are dentists now, professional people, right? They said, this is what we're giving to Mubarak to keep a vote in there and to keep.
Well, you know, Michael, we have supported lots of dictators and lots of repressive regimes and given lots of money to people who torture. And you know what? Now we torture. So we're right up there. Hey, thanks, Michael. I got a boogie. Appreciate you checking in. Someone else's soil. Got an email here from Tim in Indiana. Signs himself Nova M. On second thought, founding member. Tim writes in the subject line, oh, no, you don't. He writes, don't you dare try to push the oxymoron off on us. As the official spoke square of the gay community, we don't want him, won't have him, forever and ever, amen. If that great hog of a man should ever come out of the closet, I'm jumping back in and slamming the door shut. Love the show, handsome. Tim in Indiana.
Well, see, the problem with Rush coming out of the closet is he couldn't get back in because he wouldn't fit.
Is that what it is? All right. Now, tomorrow is the day. ProsecuteGeorgeBush.com. All those books were mailed by Bob and Jude and Arminda, and I think Bob's son, 8-year-old son, even helped out here, plus a lot of people who volunteered in Seattle to 2,200 district attorneys nationwide. The last of the books were mailed to the prosecutors on February the 7th. So starting tomorrow, February 21st, Bob Alexander and all the people involved in this work, including the funding and the other support for this project, will be calling their local prosecutors, asking them if they have received and read the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder, and if they're interested in taking the case. Now, remember, all it takes is just one of 2,200 district attorneys nationwide to make this happen. And Steve wrote this to me, and Steve is one of the people who got involved with this. Additionally, Vince Bugliosi has offered his services free of charge to assist any prosecutor in going after Bush. Keep this in mind about Bugliosi. Like him or hate him, I don't know about all of his cases, but Bugliosi has never lost a single murder case. 21 trials, 21 convictions. Now, again, I don't know about any of those except Charles Manson. So I don't know. He was the L.A. County prosecutor. I don't know the circumstances, but if you're looking for just a simple stat, a track record, 21 trials, 21 convictions for murder, I'd like to see Bugliosi assist somebody in making it 22, so to speak. Thanks to the crew tonight, Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls, Bruce Enberg, who is our economics correspondent, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, who provide the ethical balance or ballast to this program. Yeah, Bob Alexander, the one who did this project. and Bridget Wolf, the one who writes Bridget Speaks. Sharon Gordy, who is our military affairs correspondent. And Ben Birch, our podcast manager and technical advisor. And, of course, the executive producer is Catherine Bay. All right. Who we got here? Robert, calling from Buffalo, New York, listening on the Internet. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Robert.
I know you're short on time. I just wanted to say I love listening to your show. You're very respectful to your callers, and America needs more people like you on liberal talk radio.
Well, that's a very nice thing to say, Robert. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You know, it's I even try to be respectful to the right wingers who call in here, but invariably it just becomes a snot fest. You know, it's like when you're in the fourth grade and you get caught in a hassle with the kid sitting behind you, and the teacher comes up and you say, he started it. You know, I just give up with these people. I really do. I, you know, it's hard enough just being an American these days. You know what I mean? It's just hard enough doing all the things that all of us have to do, who, you know, unless you're wealthy, just to survive. Just to and not worry about whether or not your radio network is going to tank next week, or your job anywhere is going to, you know, disappear. It's hard enough without putting up with these screaming, crazed right wingers. Although I keep trying, don't I? Oy. Hey, thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it. Okay, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.